Welcome to Hot Weekly.
Hello, everyone. I'm Jonathan.
I'm Crystal.
And this is Haunt Weekly, a weekly podcast for the haunted attraction and haunted entertainment industry. Whether you're actor, owner, or just plain old aficionado, we aim to be a podcast for you. And we are back. Yet again, once again, like clockwork, every week we return somehow, some way. It is amazing. And here we are. And this week we have a very special guest joining us in just a moment. We'll be introducing her. But first things first, we have to give a shout out to our haunt friends and family here in Southeast Louisiana
right. That
have been impacted by the recent flooding and the recent tragedies in this area.
Yes.
To be clear, we're from New Orleans, and I know if you don't know the geography, it can seem scary, but we are not impacted by this in any way.
Correct. Yeah.
We are okay.
We are actually looking at maybe going and helping some of the area
haunts, and we'll see what we can do. But I mean, our understanding right now is that none of the haunts that look like they might be in the impact zone have been impacted directly.
Correct.
That being said, we know with a high degree of certainty, we know for a fact actually, that some of the haunters, some of the owners and actors of those haunts have been impacted personally.
Yes.
And so that our hearts go out to them. And what we're going to do is we're going to have links to some donation places in the show notes. Please, we are one family here. Let's all support and help our brethren in Southeast Louisiana. All right?
Yeah, sounds good.
Well, we have a great show this week. It's the second edition of Women in Haunting.
Yes.
And to help us discuss this topic in greater detail, we have Nina Collins from the Scaratorium with us. Nina, are you with us?
Yes, I am. Good morning.
Good morning. Good
morning. Glad to have you, Nina. I'm very excited about this. This is going to be a lot of fun this week. A lot of fun talking about a very serious issue.
Yeah.
Yes. I might have a very weird idea of fun, I'm realizing.
Maybe just a little one.
Maybe just a little. But Nina, can you tell us a little bit about yourself, how you got started haunting, and how you ended up at the Scaratorium?
Oh, boy, that's a long story.
Well, that's fine. We got an hour to fill, so
okay.
Go crazy.
Okay, great. Well, I honestly had to sit down and think about this because it's been such a whirlwind, crazy 15 years for me. I accidentally went on a date with a monster, I guess you could say.
That's a good way to start a story.
You know, I've heard women say that about OkCupid every once in a while. Usually it means something different.
Yeah. Well, it's interesting. My starting background is that there's just something about me that I was born with where I love the stage and screen. Mm-hmm. And I've always just loved Halloween because I can dress up like anything. I can be anything I want. In fact, I was such a fanatic. I had a whole room in my former house with nothing but costumes.
Yeah.
And this is like the pretty stuff, the fairies and butterflies and kitty cats and just eccentric witches and that kind of stuff. So I would just dress up at the drop of a hat, you know, Arbor Day, whatever, someone's birthday. I was usually there in full costume. So that's where my passion started. And I did a lot of, you know, made a lot of costumes out of drapes and went to the thrift store a lot. And, just truly love it. Well, I met my husband and now partner, Kelly Collins, through the ski club on a canoe trip, of all things. And I knew him for a couple of years, but I didn't know he was into haunted houses. And this is a true story. I mean, honestly, I was a single woman at that time, probably about 35. And mm-hmm. I thought just living as a bachelorette was scary enough. So I really didn't have any desires to have anything to do with haunted houses. And I was so opinionated that I don't think I would have dated him if I had known that he did what he did. So, but I didn't know, even though we knew each other for a couple of years. So at any rate, he told me on the first date, he broke it in. And I'm like, oh, really? Okay, well, that's interesting. But it was my former prejudice was because I didn't know anything about the industry. And there's probably a lot of other people that are kind of like that, which is an interesting perspective on the industry.
So what ideas did you have about the industry then before he enlightened you, so to speak?
Well, I just didn't, I didn't want to be scared.
Right.
I thought the people that worked at Haunted Attractions would be scary people, not only in the attractions, but the people that worked at those attractions.
Right, and their daily lives would be kind of intimidating. Kind of
really people. Different, yeah. And I'll tell you, yeah. That's what sold me. Well, what sold me was we dated for 8 or 9 months before I was able to experience the attraction that he produced at that time. And what I fell in love with the haunted attraction industry was exactly the same thing that I was afraid of, which is the people. Right. They are fantastic. They're the best people that I've ever met. Like I said, I love theater, and there's so much about theater that translates into the haunt industry with sets and designs. And but the people are so cool. They're creative. They're pretty laid back and casual, and they're fun and energetic. They come from all different walks of life. They are all really unique.
Yeah. And yeah, that's our experience too.
Right. And so that just, you know, when I met people that worked for the post office, that were attorneys, that were, you know, baggage handlers or whatever, unemployed, you know, it was just the coolest club in the world, you know, just really. And so I that's when I got the bug, you know, and that's why I've been in the industry as much as I have, for as long as I have, because we're really driven by those people, you know, wanting to work with them and wanting to create jobs and opportunities. And it's, you know, it's a double payback, you know, because they're rewarded and we're rewarded. You know, we get as much out of it as they do. So it's been a pretty fantastic experience.
So how did you end up going from there to Scaratorium?
Well, I started with Kelly back when he was producing Terror Park at Cooper Stadium, which is our, you know, minor league for minor league baseball.
Right.
And the first year I created a character, and it's funny because I said, you know, I'll never do anything ugly, scary, or gory on my face. And if you want a different answer, ask a different girl, you know?
Right.
That was my initial, you know, I'm defending myself and I'll be a pretty witch or whatever.
Right. <You know? laughs>
But I eased into the water, and honestly, within about a year or so, I was like the poster child for monsters, you know, with the safety pins in my cheeks and right. Just extreme teeth. And so, you know.
So what was your first costume then?
Well, actually, my first costume, I decided that I was going to be an ambassador for the haunt. Just jumping into it. I love big fluffy dresses, like those Southern Belle dresses. They're amazing. So I created a vampire witch character with this gorgeous dress, and I wore a sash that said Terror Park on it.
Right.
As I was initially I said, I'll be a greeter. I'm not going to go into the haunt. You know, it's, you got to do things small steps at a time.
Right.
And so that's what I did. And I used to be in parades and everything. As I thought about what character I wanted to be, I realized that the attraction that we had could use an ambassador. And that's what I was willing to do.
Okay. Cool.
So, but then anyway, and I got more and more into the haunt industry, you know, from being an actress. And then, one of the things that I, Kelly needed to have for the attraction was makeup artists and someone to teach makeup. And so I jumped into that even as a beginner because I was really enthusiastic about it. What was good for that for me was that because I had this costuming background, learning makeup kind of was able to allow me to create the full circle character.
Right.
So
because yeah, you've got all the pieces then.
Right. Right. So, boy, I lost my train of thought there for a second. So I gradually stepped up more and more. I became a instructor and then a zone captain, and we ran that for 10 years. And eventually at the end, you know, we were pretty good partners.
Right.
Kelly does most of the design and construction, and I do a lot of the other things. But we also were involved with another attraction for about 3 years. So it was crazy. We ran two haunts. The yeah. other attraction was at Wyandotte Lake at Six Flags. Columbus. It was called Fright Fest.
I've actually heard of that.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, that was really challenging. Apparently, Kelly and I don't like to have a lot of free time.
Yeah, that's what I'm hearing.
Especially a certain time of year, right?
Yeah, because we've done worked in our haunt and
volunteered at another. It's rough.
And that was enough. That was crazy. But running up to big haunts, that's
crazy.
Yeah, yeah, you really don't like sleep.
Right. It's nuts.
Have you perfected that time slowing down yet?
No,
or moving faster than time moves.
That's my greatest challenge.
Yeah.
One of the things that I did after we stopped doing the Six Flags things, I started my own face painting and makeup company, which is still in existence. This is our 13th year. It's called Funhouse Faces.
Right.
So I was really getting into makeup. And again, true to character, I like doing the kitty cats and the butterflies and stuff like that.
Yeah.
But what I do know is that anyone can do makeup. It's a technical training. So we do the Halloween events and everything else too.
Right.
Well, so that company's been around for a while. It's doing okay. Well, in 2002, through a series of events, Kelly and myself and another couple, Barry and Kathy Schieferstein, started the Midwest Haunters Convention.
Okay.
So that was our opportunity to serve the industry with training, social events and parties, and as well as shopping. Mm-hmm. So we did that for 10 years. And I'm not sure if you've heard of it, but
Actually, we covered it in the conference reminders we do.
Yeah, we actually looked at it as a possibility of something to go to at whenever we were able to.
Yeah,
Just
it's
because
geographically difficult for us, but other than that, we have been willing to go for some time.
Yeah,
right. Well,
yeah, it's been on my radar for a while.
Yeah, it's a fantastic show, and I'm so pleased and proud to have been part of it. Now, we sold it 3 years ago, but when we put that together, there wasn't any other national Halloween show other than Transworld.
Right.
And Transworld serves a different audience, so we really filled a niche. And that's what I attribute the success of that show to, because people really wanted it to happen. I mean, right. It grew beyond our wildest dreams.
Mm-hmm.
And so we did that for 10 years.
And this year, didn't the conference tour you?
Yes, they did. They certainly did. So that was challenging for our attraction to get all the construction goals that we had in mind finished.
I was going to ask you a little bit later about how difficult is it to put on a full show literally only half a season, only 6 months after season.
Well, I think with Haunters, anything is possible if you set your mind to it. And we have great crews, and they're determined and excited, and we wanted to put on a good presence for it. So it was challenging, but the nice thing, too, is that if most of your major objectives are done in June, then it's a little easier for the rest of the year, and you can work on other things like marketing and all that kind of stuff. So when we back to the Scaratorium, we ran the Scaratorium and the MHC for several years. Mm-hmm. Now we're finally away from MHC, although I produced the body art fashion show for that, which I'm tremendously proud of. But in 2009, we decided that we were going to go out on our own. And that was as a result of the fact that we were formerly, when we were at Terre Park, it was the second oldest baseball, minor league baseball stadium in the country. And it was awesome because it was pretty creepy and all that. But they decided to build a new stadium, and they really didn't have the space accommodations for us to come in and do an attraction at that time. It just, it would have had to have been a tented thing, and we're like, nah, we're not, we don't really think we want to do that. So that's when we ventured out and decided, well, we're just going to buy an attraction to get started with. And we bought the we bought an attraction from Wisconsin that was very highly rated, and we, you know, went into all that with open arms. I had no idea what it was going to be like when I started, or a lot of business owners say that, I'm sure, but yeah, it turned out to be much bigger than I imagined. But we've now been in, back to challenges, we've had to move. We set up 1 year, our first year, and then had to move 2 years later. Mm. And then we operated in another location for 2 years and then had to move. We've been in business for 8 years now, and we finally, last year was our third season in one location. So things are really looking up for us. You know, you can't make a profit. And because of the costs of the moves and everything else, we've lost momentum. But now we're in great shape. So we're really happy starting our ninth season this year.
That's great.
It's good.
Okay, and it looks like one of the reasons we had to delay this interview a little bit was because you were doing a documentary, right? The Wicked Witch of the Midwest?
I'm actually working on with someone to do a documentary. Yeah.
Oh, okay, sorry.
The Wicked Witch of the Midwest is just my personal handle.
But okay, sorry.
That's not what the documentary is entitled. Although that would be an interesting piece of work for sure.
It would be. Yeah. Okay, sorry, misunderstood then.
Yeah.
Okay.
Thought from reading about your, from going back through our chats that's
yeah.
So if anybody out there wants to make a documentary with Nina, get in touch.
It now has to be called Wicked Witch of the Midwest. This is a legal obligation. You can't get out of it.
I'll tell you for sure, I am the scariest person in our haunted house, and I don't wear costumes or makeup anymore.
Okay. Well. So, can you tell us a little bit about your experiences as a woman in haunting? Have you found that haunting is sort of a boys' club mentality, or has it always been just welcome and accepting to you?
Well, I think it's always been welcoming and accepting, as well as being predominantly male.
Right.
Right.
Amongst males, and if you look at
your mic has cut out.
Are you there?
I am.
Okay, sorry about that.
Oh, yeah. No problem.
I just had a drop off.
Okay, well.
So going back to, so you found it to be welcoming?
But also predominantly male.
Yeah.
Right. And, you know, it's not easy finding a lot of female haunt owners.
Right.
Which is a reflective of the way the industry is set up. But I'm also, you know, I'm a very enthusiastic person, and mm-hmm. I I really believe in going out there and networking and making friendships and talking to people and doing stuff. So those things help, you know.
Right. Did you get any pushback whenever you tried or like at conferences and things when you would meet new people, were you treated differently because you were a woman?
Well, I am treated differently and have been because I am not the man of the house. Kelly is the master of terror.
Right.
And he does the construction, mm-hmm. design, and operation. And what I have found is that he's the one that gets the credit for being the person that runs and owns, you know, the haunted house. Right. What yeah. One thing that really bothered me the last few years when I was at Terra Park and the first few years at the Scaratorium is Kelly would do a lot of interviews and I would do a few, but for years it frustrated me because Kelly would mention me by name and try to give me credit and everything.
Right.
It infuriates me to be referred to as the wife.
Yeah. Yeah.
The nameless wife or even the wife period. So
right.
Now he calls me his partner and I over time that situation has improved, but it's, you know, I'm the support person. I do everything right. else that I can. And we are definitely a very close team working together, but you know, the haunted house, he works on the business part-time and I work on it full-time. So,
right.
As far as media and recognition and everything else, I've just had to accept, you know, all media is good, and it's not really about me and whether my name is mentioned, but it is something that that happens. But that's true for actors and people in troops too. You don't always get the credit, and it's not always right. about the credit. It's about the work and what you accomplished. That's yeah. important to keep in mind. Yeah.
But I will say that I do understand that feeling.
Yeah, we've had similar experiences. I do most of the media work.
Right.
Just because my day-to-day job has me doing work with the media.
Right.
So I'm used to it. I'm comfortable with it.
Right.
And so whenever a reporter calls, I'm usually the one to take it.
Right.
But it's the same deal. I mention her by name, mention her. She's, and in her case, she's designing and you know, doing everything I'm doing.
Yeah, I'm the main builder, designer with a lot of help.
So, yeah, I mention all this stuff. And you're right. The media does tend to gloss over that. And I'm now curious to find if this is, you know, an issue that's, you know, I know it's not exclusive to our industry, but
right.
it's like more serious in our industry. Yeah, I had not even thought of the media angle in this. That's a very interesting and very frustrating component. You're right.
Yeah.
Yes, it is. But, you know, and it's, so, you know, it's in part because, you know, it's the media gives a lot of attention to who's the person that's the spokesperson and reporting. And,
right.
Of course, they're looking for the charisma and everything else. But the actual running of the haunt is about 30% of our business.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That whole process. And it's the whole support and business behind the business.
Right.
As well as some of the operational things that is really a greater piece. And I don't think it's okay. You know, the world doesn't understand that, but the people that own right. haunts do,
yeah.
whether you're a man or a woman, you know.
Yeah, I think that's true in a lot of businesses is that the actual running of the business, the general public just doesn't realize how much time and work that takes in order to make you successful.
Right. I mean, if you look at public perception, a lot of people, you know, are just shocked when we say, yeah, we're building at the haunt in May, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They just think you're going to throw it up in a month or a few weeks, and it doesn't work like that at all.
No, not for the big ones.
No.
There's some teardown ones that I am amazed at some of the ones that go down and up and like 3 weeks.
Right. And we used to do that. We used to have to, we were always kind of rooting for the Columbus Clippers not to make the playoffs because they delayed our construction start time. but you know,
going out to the field, young boo, you suck.
please lose. We need those 1 or 2 weeks.
Sure. You know? Hey, better, swing.
But it was amazing. I mean, that was, you know, that was a really big haunt. We set it up under the concourse of the right. ball arena, and we did that for 10 years, you know, and put it up yeah. and take it down. And it was brutal. But again, that's where I think haunters are amazing people. And that's where right. I've really got to know them too, is in there in the trenches, working side by side, hauling stuff out of storage and, you know, figuring out what to do with all the stuff from storage to create the house. And that's where I got to give Kelly a lot of credit as the master of terror and being a genius at what he does. Is it's remarkable. And he works full time.
Right.
To do that with crews in a short season is an incredible accomplishment. And that's one of the reasons why we didn't want to do that when we bought our own attractions. So we're in a permanent year-round location.
Yeah. I don't think I would haunt if we did not have a stable location either, honestly.
Yeah. Right.
But yeah. So you said that you definitely feel the industry is predominantly male. How do we get more women involved in haunting? How do we change, you know, how do we get more people like you interested? Obviously, I can't go around and date all the women. So that's simply not a practical solution. So your husband can't either. So we have to work out something better.
Well, I can say that speaking to our attraction, that we've grown and evolved a lot over the years, and we've really appreciated the development of our cast and crew to where we're doing a better job at attracting people because of the people that we have. And it takes a while to get established, but I was thinking about what the mix is with our current attraction. I'd say it's something like 60-40.
Okay.
That's so, but these, you know, we have people just call their, you know, tell their friends about us.
Right.
And that's about, I mean, that's the best resource that we have is our actors recruiting other actors and knowing who other, you know, good candidates may be. And we also, I would say that we are, you know, we're a very diverse haunt with open arms and opinions on people with other alternative lifestyles. Right. So there is a contingent of, you know, people that I'm not sure if they're man or a woman really, but it doesn't matter.
Yeah. Doesn't matter as long as you can be a monster.
Yeah. Okay. And that's something that I've heard in previous conversations about this, both on and off air, is that one of the key ways to attract more women into this industry is the first off is to have a crew filled with good people that will bring them in. And that's something that came up in the previous conversation and dialogues that we've had off mic with other haunters. Because we've been to haunts and we've worked at haunts where the mix was, well, Crystal's nickname might as well have been Token. But
yeah,
it's rough because it seems like when you reach that mixture sometimes, there's almost no way to bring more women on board.
Well, it's part of our culture too, as far as attracting. I mean, we support people equally, give people equal opportunities. We want everybody in our haunt to be safe and to have a good time and good experiences.
Yeah. Right.
And so the culture of haunt can really affect. I mean, if you look at women as second class citizens, then you're not ever going to have a lot of them. But
yeah, I would hope not. You don't deserve them.
Right. But if you only allow men on your construction team, then you're never going to get them either. You know, so we don't really, I really don't think that we even consider sex when we're working with the people we have.
Right. That's good.
And I don't think that a lot of our actors necessarily do either. It doesn't matter whether you're a man or a woman. If you're going to be an actor in the spot, we need you to do your job, you know?
Yeah. And I think that is one of the things that, and you kind of alluded to something there, is that it's equal equal opportunity and equal responsibility at the same time.
Correct.
I think that's very important because
and appreciation.
Equal appreciation, equal reward, equal responsibility. Because I've been to some haunts where women are pedestalized, basically, and that's one of the things we've seen is that. And this is something I guess that I want to ask you is: do you feel that women are often typecast into certain roles, whether it's a sexualization, a victimization, or like a domestic role type thing?
Right.
Do you think not necessarily your haunt, but other haunts that you've visited and been to, have you observed that?
Well, yes, I have seen that definitely in the industry. You know, how prevalent that is, I'm not really sure. I was listening to one of your interviews previously and it talking about, well, you know, when a woman shows up, you know, she automatically going to be typecast as a victim. And, you know, we allow our actors to choose what positions they're going to be in. And so it's whatever they're comfortable with.
Right.
Now, I will say that having been in the haunt industry for so long, I really look up to a lot of these female characters and male as well, too.
Right.
That are strong and confident, that are really into acting. And, you know, there's some fantastic people in the industry, as you're aware of. Mm-hmm. So those things, I hope that our cast also look up to and aspire to. And that's back to the Midwest Haunters Convention. You know, there's some wonderful opportunities to get exposed and tour other haunts and meet other actors. And that's one of the reasons why the conference is so cool.
Yeah.
But, yeah, so.
So what kind of roles do women play at the Scaratorium? I know you say that they get to pick what they want to be, but.
Well, I mean, we have women in place all across the board. Mm-hmm. So, you know, in security or zone captains or as, you know, makeup artists. But as actors, I mean, there's really no position that a woman can't do if she wants to.
Right.
Yeah, I agree.
And we do have some gender-specific roles, although those aren't necessarily played by women. And I like to make a point about that.
Right.
There are some men. I was just complimenting one of our guys. His name is Ron Gillespie. And he's a straight guy. But he plays just this most hilarious nurse. and I give a lot of credit to people that go outside their boundaries to do roles like that. You can find you can have a lot of fun. It can be challenging. But you know, I mean, it's funny to see him as a nurse with his little goatee and whatnot. But women play that role, too. So,
oh, yeah. No, that sounds like equality. that's what that sounds like, is that women can play any role and so can men.
Well, and that's another thing that I think attracts me to the industry, and it's a haunted house, and for me, I was like a librarian woman when I got into this. Right. And so the first time I was able to really scare someone gave me a great sense of power, and I've had people think that I was a man, and that's pretty cool, you know. And when you, but it's the opportunity to develop and explore yourself, and to push yourself to new limits and try new things, and it's a safe environment, you know, to be able to go into your alter ego. You know,
right.
Be someone that you're not, because it's all pretend. And I think that's good for a person's development. The other thing that I will say is, since I was such a fraidy cat when I started dating Kelly, the experience of being in the haunted attraction for me personally as a woman has really allowed me to face my fears.
Yeah.
You know, it, when I first started going through haunted attractions, Kelly had to pull me through like a little donkey, you know, I did not want to pick my feet up, but, you know, and then years later, you know, I'm a Zoom captain. I'm walking through the haunt with no lights on and, yeah, you know, right. It's a progression of,
Once you're in a haunt long enough, I feel like visiting other haunts and attending them, you feel kind of like you're in a stranger's living room. It's a home feeling, just not your home.
Right. And that's where my personal experience has developed a lot, because now I know I'm not terrified like I was at first. Even if it's, I've never been through a haunt before, I've got a grip on my fear. And I think that's something that kind of helps me in my general life. Something happens, I'm going to look at it. I'm going to be calm. I'm not going to go into full panic reaction necessarily. So,
It's very interesting. Right. I can see where it would be very useful. Yeah.
Right. I'm talking about bravery, basically.
Yeah.
No, I'm not scared of the world as much as I used to be anymore. So.
Right.
Okay. So we talked about in front of the scenes. Are you seeing women taking a larger role behind the scenes at your haunt? And elsewhere. You probably only know the behind the scenes of your haunt. I'm realizing the stupidity of that.
Well, behind the scenes of our haunt, I mean, we have, you know, zone captains and trainers and makeup artists and wardrobe. And so, yeah, our women are, they do everything. There isn't anything that we've ever told a woman that she can't do, you know. And anyone that's interested in doing something, you know, will, just make sure they understand what they're getting into, and you know, we take care of them, make sure they're okay. And
are you noticing more women at the owner's conventions?
I couldn't really, you know, I
yeah, that seems to be one of the issues we've discovered, is that there's not very many women owned haunts, or even women partly owned haunts.
Right. But this last HauntCon, I did notice more women attendees than the previous year. And so that's...
Fingers crossed.
I'm just seeing maybe in other areas, is that what you're finding, or is it still pretty much a guy's industry?
Well, I think there are more and more women that go to the conventions, and that's... I think that's because of the popularity of haunt movies and everything else. And there are a lot of haunted houses. So,
I think that they're more there for fans of horror than they are of looking to actually start their industry or already running their industry.
Well, I don't know. I mean, I think if you look at society in general, you're going to find that there's more males in every role as owners. And
yeah, and that's very true. That's the problem, is how do you separate what's unique to our industry to what's a problem in society as a whole?
Status quo.
Yeah.
I have a friend in Boise, Idaho. He works for Entrepreneurship Northwest. His name is Norris Kruger. And I asked him about gender differences as far as entrepreneurs. And he did say that women are just less likely overall to start a high growth business. But women led tech or growth firms do better for their investors. So I'm not sure that we're there yet. Maybe, you know, in time that will change, but I don't think women are as still as likely to be risk takers, and that's because of a lot of factors in their sex category, I guess.
Right. Okay. Yeah.
Well, shifting the focus away from that for a little bit, there's a few questions we ask pretty much everyone we have on this show for any reason whatsoever.
Right.
And so the first one is, what is your favorite scare that you've built or run or been involved with in some way?
Hmm.
It's always a tough one.
Or seen done somewhere else.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You do not have to be the owner of your favorite scare.
Yeah. Well, favorite scare. That's tough.
That is tough.
I worked for, it was one of my first scares. I can tell you that was my favorite one. We were at the Ohio State Fair working for the Scare Factory, had an attraction there. And I was able to scare this big group of like football players, just little me. I'm like, yay, score one for Minnie Mouse. So that was most memorable. And then, I don't know, one of my favorite scenes is at Erebus. They have a swamp scene, and it was just beautiful. I'm not even sure that I was that scared. But overall, one of the scariest haunted attractions that I've been through is actually Bloodview in Cleveland. Their volunteer haunt, actor intense, old school style. And their actors are just amazing. I went on the MHC bus tour a few years ago. they really scared me. So that's my favorite overall scary haunted house.
You gotta watch out for those volunteer haunts, man. anyone that does this for free is going to do it for the thrill of scaring the hell out of you, and they're going to work very hard at that.
Well, I think as far as Bloodview goes, they're just really professionally run. Yeah.
Right.
They may be volunteers, but those people take acting and scaring more seriously than any other general cast I've ever met.
Yeah.
Okay.
You know, and we talk a lot about how one of our favorite haunts that unfortunately haven't been around for a few years was a local fire department way down in the swamps south of New Orleans here, Lafitte, Louisiana, used to do a haunted attraction every year. They build a tunnel. I don't know how the hell these guys built this in a week.
They constructed in a week.
They constructed about a quarter mile long tunnel in a week, and I have no idea how that's humanly possible. I mean, that's a biblical feat, literally biblical feat. Noah, that's like second to Noah's Ark in my book.
I'm not sure why you'd want to do that.
they did it, and you know they were very, very dedicated at scaring the hell out of everyone. So you know it's always interesting what you can come across.
Oh, well, and there really aren't any limits to, you know, again, to what you can do if you got a right group of people. If I'd been in that crew, I would have said, let's consider another idea.
Yeah,
maybe another different approach, but that's how they did it, and it was a lot of fun.
Yeah.
Okay, so where do you see the future of haunting going over the next, I would say, 5 to 10 years or so?
Well, I hope it, you know, continues to thrive and pick up. I think we're seeing a lot more support in media in terms movies and TV shows and acceptance of all that across the general public. I think it always will be a huge holiday, so to speak, you know, referring to Halloween. And I think that the animatronics and the development of the things that are available to the haunt industry continues to really enhance the haunt experience. And customers really want more live, well, live, but also static and animatronic type stuff. What I'm saying there is they're getting harder to scare. So that's a challenge for the haunt industry is to keep stepping up your game to keep people, you know, really scared when they walk through your haunt.
Right.
Do you see any potential? Because one thing we've talked about a couple of times on the show is in the United States, the haunt industry is so connected to Halloween. It's that late September through early November season. That's all you get. But we're seeing more and more year-round haunts open too. Do you think we're going to finally maybe break somewhat free of this only haunting at Halloween thing?
Well, excuse me. I think that's doubtful. I mean, I don't know how as just a haunt you can do that. Now, right. What I do know is, and this is a great way to go back and address future of haunting as well. One of the things that a lot of attractions are finding extremely popular are the new escape rooms.
Yeah.
And that is a way for haunts to even make more money. And there are opportunities to do that type of thing year round. If you've got the proper facilities to do that, it's a new and it's really rapidly, fastly growing.
Yeah, I would say, yeah, you need the facilities and you need a location that supports it too. You need to be near a metro area, I think, that can draw in that year-round audience for that.
Right.
Yeah, both of the ones that are near us are year-round.
Yeah, well, three of them actually.
Rise has their own now?
Yeah, okay. Rise has their own too. Yes, that's how big it is. Literally, we learned about a third one this morning.
Wow. Well, it's much easier to do that in the South too, because frankly, no one wants to go out when there's, you know, 12 inches of snow on the ground in Ohio.
That's true.
I do not blame them.
Although the other trend in the industry is that there are more and more haunts that are opening for special weekends.
Valentine's Day
and Christmas is a big one. We've done that for the last few years. And so you're seeing more and more opportunities to open on select dates. It's just the cost of overhead to have the staff you need for a large haunt is cost prohibitive unless you've got enough people coming in. But by specializing on those special weekends like St. Patrick's Day or Valentine's Day.
Right.
Now I'm doing St. Patrick's Day haunt. That sounds awesome.
Yeah.
The haunts terrify me anyway, so this works.
Yeah. One haunt that comes to mind that is really doing a lot of that is Dark Hour in Texas.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So, yeah, that's a good point, though, about the special holidays. How has being open on Christmas worked out for you guys and doing the holiday?
It's worked out good. It's been profitable. We are not going to do it this year, and it's the way the calendar falls. It's just the timing needs to make it worthwhile so that you think enough people are going to come, and the way that it is this year, we don't think that's going to happen.
Right. Okay.
Yeah, you can tell a lot about me because I know exactly what day of the week Halloween is going to fall on from like November 1st the year before.
Right.
But I have no idea when Christmas falls this year. I just totally realized I have no idea when Christmas is. Priorities.
Right. What is there other than Halloween? You know,
exactly.
It's like Halloween light, except it's like Halloween without the scary stuff. It's like, what's the
point?
Well,
except for us. People give us scary stuff.
Oh, yeah, people do give us scary stuff for Halloween. I'm sure you get that, too, or people for Halloween, for Christmas, will give you scary stuff or makeup stuff or haunt stuff in general.
Yeah, we did. I mean, we really enjoyed it, and it's nice for us because it was nice opportunities for actors to work and make a little bit of money. And you know, we wish it was more practical, but there's a lot of marketing involved in those other off shoulder events, and you know, this year we're just focusing on Halloween, so that's good.
Right. Well, recently, I remember, was it this year or last year, that Valentine's Day lined up the day after Friday the 13th?
Oh, yeah. You're right. It was in the last couple of years, I know.
I can't remember when it was, and I remember, like, even haunts that were not normally open for Valentine's Day were trying to drag something together for that.
Right. And Friday the 13th is also another, you know, great time to be open. Now, typically, if the 14th isn't on Valentine's Day, you're not going to get as many people turning out. But
yeah. Right. But, yeah, so, there's a lot of interesting opportunities there. Well, do you have anything else you want to add? Any final comments or thoughts you have that we didn't cover?
Well,
the floor is yours.
Good question. I really appreciate your allowing me the opportunity to do an interview with you.
Love having you.
Yes, and our hearts go out to our friends and fellow haunts and actors in Louisiana and everyone else that's suffering down there.
Yeah.
Right.
As far as in general, I would just say that if someone is interested in Halloween or haunted houses and really hasn't explored it, that it can be truly an amazing thing to have in your life. There's something, our haunt is very special, and a lot of that comes from the leadership of Kelly Collins, my partner. We consider ourselves to be a haunt family, and there's a lot of, I would just say, misfits, maybe. Yeah. People do come from all different walks of life and have challenges and everything else. But when they come to the haunt, we consider ourselves to be a family. And for some of us, our haunt family is really the best family or the only family that some of us have. Mm-hmm. A place where you can feel loved and appreciated and respected, and where you have friendships, and there's endless opportunities for that. So we're kind of like a haunters 4-H club is what I call it.
That's a good way to look at it.
But most importantly, we're a family too. And we all, you know, just working together and experiencing our lives together is wonderful. So I would say to people, again, that are considering getting into this, to really have the courage and challenge yourself and explore, you know, those opportunities. Enthusiasm does go a long way. But on the flip side, drama is never really a good thing. So right. It's better to leave a lot of your personal baggage outside the door during the Halloween season when you're acting. Mm-hmm. But it's been a pleasure and a privilege and a whole bunch of work to be involved as we have, but it's the people in the industry too, that because we ran the convention and we've been speakers and been very involved for the last 15 years on my part, that it, not only does that family sense of haunt pertain to our haunted attraction, it also pertains to other people in the industry. You know, so I guess if I had one piece of advice to anyone that's listening that's not really into all this, it would be to say, get off the couch. and apply now, you know, check out your options. Yeah. And you don't even have to like scary stuff.
Right.
If you like costuming, you may, you know, find there's a niche there for you, or makeup, or
right. Yeah, in fact, you're doing your casting calls tomorrow, right?
Yes, correct. This weekend.
Yeah.
So
yes. This will be going out a little after that, so we can't.
But we're recording on a few days before. We did not record this live as you were listening to it.
Yeah.
on your iTunes player.
Yeah.
But, so, anyways, thank you. We greatly appreciate you being here. Thank you very much for joining us for this past hour, Nina. It's been wonderful, and I think some great and enlightening views, actually.
Yeah.
So,
thank you so much, Jonathan and Crystal.
Well, on that note, everyone, I'm Jonathan.
I'm Crystal.
This was Haunt Weekly, episode number 38. Once again, as usual, follow us on Haunt Weekly at Twitter, follow us at Haunt Weekly on Facebook, and we will see you guys next week.